Blog Talk Radio.
Well, this is Whirl with Merle, and I'm your host, Merle Exit. Yes, it's 7 p.m. here in New York City. We finally got some decent weather. Yeah, and, well, it is here, at least in New York City. New Jersey wasn't so happy from all the rain. But we got a pretty good show tonight. First of all, I went to a show called there was an entertainer, Avi Hoffman. They say he's too Jewish. That's so the show, and the show is called Still Jewish After All These Years. And then we have Rich Wolin calling in. I saw some these wine caddies, great pieces of art, and we're going to talk about that. And then also, I had stayed, when I was in Orange County, I stayed at a place called Cromwell Manor and met Pamela Rini, who not only works at the Cromwell Manor, but she's also a singer, and she owns her own baking business. So she'll be on also to chat with us. Isn't that pretty cool? But, you know, one of the things I've been hearing, that not that I'm complaining, but now they're telling you that you should eat chocolate, that you should eat, I don't know how many ounces, I guess a square a day. It has to be dark chocolate, and it says it's better if it's for your heart, so you won't get a heart attack. So instead of taking a pill for a heart condition, you take a, you know, suck on a square of chocolate. You might as well get the best, you know. But now, I don't think this really counts. I mean, if we want to get a little further on the chocolate, you really can't get a bit of it.
What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale.
And you can get these wonderful brownies if you go to brownies.com. And it's not the easiest thing to find in your stores. Unless you live in Phoenix, then you can easily get them. God, I really am craving the brownies already. I'm craving chocolate now that they told us, you know, to eat it or get a heart attack. What can I tell you? So we're going to start our show, though. Yeah, let's open up our show. I got somebody there. I hear you on your end. You're on the air now, Desavi.
Yeah.
Hey.
Hey, Merle, how are you?
Okay. I was just hearing on the TV, I guess I must have mistaken it, because I was listening to the news, and I kept on hearing something about there being a tax on Jews.
You know, I haven't been watching the news today, so I'm not sure, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Well, I think...
Somehow that never surprises me.
Well, I think it might have been, they were talking about beverages.
Beverages.
So I guess I misunderstood it.
Well, yeah, orange
juice. On juice.
Cranberry juice.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chinese juice.
Yeah, I'm some of that. I know that Chinese juice.
Yeah.
I know. I remember that joke. God, that joke was cracked before my ass was, I'll tell you. So, Tommy, tell everybody, introduce yourself. Tell everybody who you are.
Avi Hoffman, and I am too Jewish. Or at least that's what they tell me. That's what they told me for years.
And when, like, I understand, you started in the business, like, when you were a little pitchka.
Yeah, I started acting when I was born. I was born on the stage, pretty much. Or at least at the hospital where there were 25 medical students watching my cesarean birth, and they applauded. So I took a bow, and that's when it started.
That was... And they gave you the clap?
Yeah, from a very early age.
Yeah, and then what was next?
Well, no, I've been working pretty much since the time I was 4, and I started professionally when I was 10. In the Yiddish theater, I was 10 years old. I was already working with Arthur Cocker. So you see, that's how it goes.
For those people who don't know who what Arthur Cocker is, let's just say old fart.
Right, pretty much.
Okay. Okay, good.
So yeah, I've been working on the stage pretty much all my life, and I finally, after 30 odd years, wrote a show about it, and that was my first show that I wrote, called Too Jewish. Avi Hoffman's Too Jewish, and that was a big hit off Broadway for about a year and a half back in 1994-95, and eventually it was on public television, and it still is. And I've got DVDs and CDs and all that stuff, and it's been all over the country. I've done over 2,500 performances of it nationwide. And then I wrote a sequel called Too Jewish Too, which T-O-O, not T-W-O. And so that was a continuation of this celebration of Jewish identity. And now I guess you saw my third show, which I just wrote recently, called Still Jewish After All These Years. And all three of them put together are kind of a really, an extraordinary look at life in Jewish culture, comedy, music, storytelling, and my personal odyssey through being an actor in the Jewish world and growing up with Holocaust survivor parents in the Bronx and in Israel, and trying to make sense of this Meshuggah belt, this Meshuggah world.
Meshuggah is quite the word for it. It's definitely.
Yeah.
So you start, let's say you started, what did you do when you were like 10?
Well, you know, I was in a very unique position that as a child, my parents, who were survivors of the Holocaust, spoke to me in Yiddish. And so I was one of the youngest people to speak fluent Yiddish. And to this day, I feel like I'm one of the last of the Mohicans, because there aren't very many left of us who are my age who speak fluent Yiddish. And
right.
So by the time I was 10, 1968, the Yiddish theater was still, it was in a downturn, but it was still pretty prominent. And they were always looking for kids who could speak Yiddish and act. And so I became one of those kids. And they offered me a role in a kind of a typical Yiddish melodrama called Bronx Express, 1968. And I got to play the role of an old man. No, actually a little boy. I played the old man a few years later. And that started my professional career in the New York theater.
So, were you living in the Bronx?
Yeah, I was living in the Bronx.
Oh, what part?
Cedric Avenue, near the reservoir. I went to PS 95.
Okay. I grew up in Pelham Parkway.
Yeah, not too far.
Yeah.
Near Moishalu Parkway. We used to call it Moishalu Parkway.
Yeah,
Moishalu. We called it Moishalu.
Moishalu. Yeah, there was always a thing, either they called Meshula Parkway or Marshallu, and you know,
right,
depending on whoever wanted to, you know, to say what was going on.
Right. Well, I went to a Yiddish school that was right off Gun Hill Road, right near Jerome Avenue.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, that's where I grew up. And I would have probably still been there to this day, except when I was 11 years old, after I worked in the Volksbühne in the Yiddish theater, my father decided to move to Israel. It was 1969, and the Bronx was burning, and there were garbage strikes, and lots of drugs in Woodstock, and my dad decided that maybe it would be a better place for me to grow up in Israel. And
you didn't move to Long Island first?
No, Long Island. We did not follow the rest of the wandering Jews to Long Island. We ended up in right outside in the suburbs of Tel Aviv for about 10 years. And I did a lot of work in Tel Aviv, a lot of theater, a lot of television, a lot of movies, and really developed quite a substantial career in Israel. But then I decided I wanted to have a career in the States, so I came back, and I've been working ever since.
Now, just I'm very curious. Now, being in Israel, you were there for how long?
About 9 years.
Now, at that time, I mean, like, I'm sure like myself, like, I always got, like, mixed up. You go to Hebrew school, and then, like, you only learned Hebrew how to pray. You didn't learn Hebrew how to speak. And then when you get home, you don't speak Hebrew, you speak Yiddish. So,
right.
But
yeah,
now
I never went to Hebrew school, so I don't know.
Oh, when you were in Israel, were you now learning to speak Hebrew versus Yiddish?
Oh God, yes. Nobody wanted to speak Yiddish in Israel. Now, 30 years later, have the Israelis discovered that Yiddish is actually a very, very beautiful language, and it carries with it a very, very rich culture. But back in those days, in 1969 and the early 70s, Yiddish was definitely not the language anybody wanted to speak. Everybody spoke Hebrew, and Yiddish was looked upon as the old language of those who died in the Holocaust. And
really?
So, it was not a very popular language. But the younger generation spoke it, and I spoke it, so I was a kid who could talk only to old people. And I guess that's the story of my life, the young kid who speaks to old people. And so I learned Hebrew very quickly. It took me about 6 months to learn the language. Within a year, I had lost my American accent, and I was working in the professional theater right away.
I find Yiddish as a wonderfully sarcastic language.
I agree. I think Yiddish is an amazing language.
It's turned to sarcasm. It's like, you know, when something happens like over and over and you say, manishtana, then you got to explain what that all means. But it's become almost, you know, an expression, you know, that when you not even though it's Hebrew, that it's become a Yiddish expression, you know, because it's sarcastic.
Right.
Yeah. But so let's get back over here. And so you were doing Yiddish theater in New York or all over the United States?
Well, no, Yiddish theater in New York when I was a kid. But then when I came back from Israel, I actually started doing Yiddish theater again because they heard I was back.
Uh-huh.
And now I was an adult, but I still spoke Yiddish and I was still acting. And I ended up doing Yiddish and Yiddish-style theater all over the country. Many different shows over the years, starting with, you know, Ben Bonus and Mina Byrne and Yiddish melodramas. But then I started doing these very revolutionary kind of modern Yiddish productions of young contemporary talent that really became revolutions in the Yiddish theater during the 80s. Shows like The Golden Land, and The Rise of David Levinsky and Songs of Paradise. These are all shows that used half Yiddish and half English to bring a very different kind of world to the mainstream theater-going audience all over the country.
There's still the Yiddish theater going on in New York. I forgot the...
Yeah, it's called the Volksbühne. It's actually the same company
that
I worked for when I was 10 years old. It's been around for over 100 years, and it still exists. It's changed hands several times, but it's still there, and it's the only professional Yiddish theater in the United States of America.
Really?
Yeah.
And of course it would only be in New York.
Of course. I mean, there are several upstart Yiddish theaters around. There's one in Montreal. There's even another one in New York now. There's this competition between this little upstart and the old established Yiddish folk theater. There's one Yiddish theater in Israel. But what amazes me the most is there are Yiddish theater groups all through Europe today. And Yiddish has seen an enormous upsurge in the European continent. So it's a very fact, 200 years ago, a very famous Jewish historian was recorded saying the following. He said, within 10 years, Yiddish will be dead. It's 1808. He's dead, and Yiddish is still alive. So, somehow Yiddish refuses to die. And I'm very honored to be a part of, at least a little bit of bringing a little taste of Yiddish back onto the stage. And there have been many others like me who try to bring a taste of Yiddish back into the English-speaking world.
Well, you realize, I'm sure, as you travel the country, that Yiddish words have come into people's, normal language, and they don't realize that it's Yiddish.
Sure. There are actually more than 5,000 Yiddish words that have officially become part of the English language in the Webster's Dictionary.
Really?
This is true. Yeah, more than any other language. Words like schlemazel, schlemiel, schlep, spiel, schmalz, schlep, schmendrick, schnorrer, schmutz, schmalz.
A lot with S's, huh?
A lot of S's, a lot of shoes, a lot of she's urges.
But I noticed, for instance, and it's funny because as I travel, and somebody will say, somebody gave me a big spiel on it. And I'm going, spiel?
Spiel.
Oh, spiel, got it.
Or stick, would you stop that stick? No, shtick, that would be shtick.
Right.
Yeah, so, it's quite stunning to see how the Yiddish language has permeated into the English.
And forget about it, no one is going to go...
Right.
It's chutzpah.
Yeah. Chutzpah.
It's got a lot of chutzpah. Chutzpah.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean chutzpah? Oh, God. Okay. Right. Got it. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I once did a little research into the word chutzpah, and it's fascinating because if you go on LexisNexis, which is the legal database, you'll find that the word chutzpah has been used more often in court cases all over the country, and especially in the Deep South. In places like Georgia and Tennessee, you've got all these judges going, you got some chutzpah there. You got a lot of chutzpah over there. And it's really quite interesting to see how, words like that have really permeated the American consciousness.
Yes, I'm quite humored by it. My parents spoke to their families in Yiddish, and they would speak it, so I didn't understand what they were saying.
Right. Well, that's the usual story.
Yes. And that's
sad. It's kind of a tragedy because Yiddish is a language that has existed for over 1,000 years. And I don't know if a lot of people realize that for over 1,000 years, the Jews have spoken Yiddish, have written in Yiddish. There is 1,000 years worth of literature and poetry and music that has been come out of that Yiddish tradition. And it's mostly been lost in the last 60 years since the Holocaust. It's almost disappeared.
Wow.
In one, two generations, it's almost gone. But, my mother is professor of Yiddish at Columbia University, and she's found that her classes over the last 25 years have slowly gotten bigger and bigger and bigger, and Yiddish is actually being taught all over the world. So, it's quite amazing. It'll never die.
Huh.
Too beautiful. Too rich.
Gazoy. Yes. So I understand you also did. You were also a fiddler on the roof too.
I've done Fiddler on the Roof several times, and I've done hundreds of other productions at many different theaters all over the world. So, you know, I'm a working actor, thank goodness. I also direct and produce. I had my own theater company for several years in South Florida. I try to keep busy. But, you know, what has been most successful for me over the past 15 years have been these one-man shows that I've written celebrating Jewish culture and identity and music and comedy. And so that's really where I have found a niche. And I try to bring an awareness of this Jewish, this beautiful Jewish culture that is being forgotten to people all over the country, all over the world.
So, and I want to also say, I'm sorry I didn't have a, I was hope I should have asked you for a CD to upload some singing.
You know, if you go to avihoffman.com, that's pretty easy, A-V-I-H-O-F-F as in Frank, M-A-N, avihoffman.com, not only can you order my DVDs and my CDs, you can also watch promos and listen to the promos of my first two shows.
My
new show is too new to even be on it yet. I haven't even put it on yet. Working on it.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you're one of the first people to see my show.
Really?
It's very new. It's only the last several months that I've been working on it.
Now, I have to explain something to my audience, to something that happened, because I have, like, when people are following me, especially on my blog and stuff and where I go, now, have you ever been to, or do you know about Mardi Gras? Have you been to Mardi Gras? Have you ever gone?
In New Orleans? No, I've seen the movie.
No, to a Mardi Gras.
Any Mardi Gras, not New Orleans?
Well, it could be New Orleans. As it turns out, New Orleans isn't the only one that does it.
Right.
I've been
to some kind of celebration, sure.
So, well, I had gone for the first time. I was in Shreveport, and I didn't really know any traditions. And there was this tradition they have this thing called a king cake. And the cake...
Okay.
The cake is kind of like a coffee ring. It's a coffee ring with sugars, different colored sugars on the top to represent the Mardi Gras colors. And apparently, many years ago, I guess when this first started, they would put a bean in the cake. They would bake a bean in the cake, and whoever got the bean, the slice that had the bean, was supposed to get up and do an imitation of one of the three wise men. Well, at some point it got changed, and instead of a bean, they decided to put in this little plastic baby into the cake. Now, as it was, finding this out, I was, like, hysterical already. Like, who would... A little plastic baby in a cake? I mean, you could choke on the damn thing.
Right.
But then I found out...
You might eat the baby.
Well, it's got even funnier for me. Because then I found out that the baby is supposed to represent baby Jesus.
Ah.
Now, once
nice
I heard
perfect.
That... I lost it.
Right.
I couldn't help laughing. This whole idea of putting a little plastic baby Jesus into a cake. And,
wow.
You know, and so my brain was doing things like thinking of, okay, here's the headlines. Child chokes on baby Jesus could not be saved. Then
That's
I was
funny.
Thinking, wait a minute, here's what we should do. We should put baby Moses in a babka. Comes complete with edible swaddling cloth. Now,
what happened
with this is that one of the companies that had sent me a cake, and so I have the little plastic baby, and I while I was at your show, I had it in my pocket because I keep joking about this whole thing. And when you started talking about Bob Dylan, you said that he found Jesus.
Right.
I went hysterical, silently laughing, had to fall onto the floor. Because all I kept thinking was, yeah, and I found baby Jesus, too, in a king cake, and now he's in my pocket.
Well, that's very funny. That's very funny.
So I'm really, but I have a very sarcastic humor, too. So
obviously,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so I was, you know, when you had said that, that was like, that just it got me hysterical with that, you know, just because of hearing that. But to get back, where are you performing next? You had just finished doing the show at the Queens Theater in the Park. And
I'm back in Florida right now. And I start rehearsals next week for a show I'm doing down in Florida called The Quarrel. And I'll be doing that for the next 2 months at the Gable Stage, which is in Coral Gables. Beautiful theater. And it's a very exciting piece based on a great piece of Jewish literature, actually. And so I get to play a rabbi, completely against type. I get to play a Jewish rabbi. Which is why I've grown this monster beard that looks like a beaver on my face.
Yeah.
And so with this dead animal on my face, I now go to play this role. And I'm hoping to bring my new show into New York City sometime in the next several months.
So are we getting you into the Jewish Museum in South Beach?
Oh, I don't know. I've been there more than once. I have performed there several times, so we'll see.
Yeah,
but I usually perform in theater.
Regarding history.
Right.
They have all these people up there, you know. You should get in there. Did you try?
The Jewish Museum in Miami Beach?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've performed there several times.
No. I mean to get yourself as part of their... The exhibition.
Like a wax figure of me.
No. I don't mean a wax. Yeah, they have the whole exhibit of all the, you know, all the Jews in history kind of thing. And I guess they were from Florida. I'm not sure. But,
mostly it's the Jewish Museum of Florida. So, I think you have to be born or die here before they can put you in the museum.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so. But I know them well. I've worked there several times.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't think I'm ready for an exhibit yet.
Oh, all right. Nah,
yeah.
I don't think so either.
Yeah, but maybe in a few years. Yeah.
I think you got some time.
Yeah, when I get a little older and I start to turn wax-like, then I think they'll put me in. There you go. All right, Merle. This has been great. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome, and you know, if you want to, you know, if you want to send off anything, and I can get it up there, you know, I can play some stuff anytime, you know, on the radio show.
Sure. Just, you know, tell your listeners, avihoffman.com. It's great stuff. They'll really enjoy it. Makes a great gift for the holidays. People really love my work, and it's good for all generations. You know, there's nothing dirty about it. There's nothing. It's all clean, and it's really great for grandparents, parents, and their kids, and people really love the show. So hopefully I'll see you soon when I do my new show in New York City.
Okay, great.
All right, thanks so much.
Have a good evening.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yep, that was Avi Hoffman. And, wait a minute, who's, oh, Yiddish, what? And, is that's all you got to say? Well, we just have to wait for the next caller to call in. That's, you know, don't worry about that. But in the meantime, let's see. Oh, Well, let's see. Instead of another sponsor, well, let's see. I'm going to hold off on the song because we're going to go into our next person that's calling in. And you're on the air, and you can introduce yourself. Go ahead.
Hi, Merle. This is Rich Wolin.
Hi, Rich.
It's good to hear your voice.
Good to hear
you. I was just
too.
Listening to Avi Hoffman before I called. It sounded like a very interesting interview.
Don't get nervous.
Well, it's the first time I've been on anything public, but
it's okay.
I'm calling to talk to you about winecaddies.com.
I have to tell you, I was really, really fascinated. When it comes to artwork, you know, like when somebody's slapping a dot on a canvas and everybody goes, ooh, ah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like going and I'm going, what the hell are they looking at?
Yeah, what is that?
Yeah.
Exactly.
But so when something gets is really creative, then that stands out as a piece of artwork, something that someone can create. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And your wine caddies are, and plus you have wine caddies and you also have just sculptures like for desks. As well.
Right. We started out doing sculptures, and we kind of migrated to wine caddies about 5 years ago. And we found that a lot of people like the wine caddies because they're larger, and they are home decor, and people put them in their bars, and they put them just around the house. And we do sculptures of wine caddies, which are of sports, of professions, of planes, locomotives, trains, and we do a lot of custom work as well.
Now, before I get to, like, when you started this all, can you, like, just explain what the caddies are made of?
Okay. They're made of recycled steel, so they're green, environmentally correct, and we started doing this about 10 years ago before the whole green program became very big in the United States or elsewhere. And they are made one at a time, all handmade, and they're welded out of this recycled steel, and they have copper trim. And lately we started painting some of the pieces because it appeals to the American audience.
And in terms of when painting, I mean, like, what do you use the paint steel with? I mean,
it's just an oil-based paint.
Okay. I'm just curious.
But we do, we then will spray it with a lacquer to inhibit any rusting because if you're going to leave it outside in the rain or you're going to leave it near an open window, by and large, it will start rusting unless it has that lacquer on it.
Mm-hmm. So what even made you decide to, like, get into this?
Well, like a lot of people, I was out of a job. I was talking to a lot of people, and I happened to see a lot of these sculptures that were done in Germany, and I was very interested and intrigued and thought that I might introduce these sculptures to the United States. And so about 11 years ago, I started working with some people who owned a studio in Germany, and I introduced the European product to the United States. And after about 6 months, we realized that the U.S. culture and the European culture were totally different, and that what sold well in Europe just was not selling in the United States at all. And so we decided to design product based on my understanding of the U.S. market. And fortunately, every time we introduced a new product, which was primarily in the sports area to begin with, and we introduced a lot of golf pieces, they sold very well in the United States. So after a period of about 3 years, the difference between the European product and the U.S. product is almost entirely different. there are very few overlapping products. Although we still have our designs, which we do here in the United States, produced for us in Germany.
So now, when you say that you, at which point did you decide that to have them as wine caddies versus just?
That was about 6 years ago.
Okay.
And actually, it was more than 6 years ago. Now that I think about it, it was more like 8 or 9 years ago. And we just introduced one or two pieces, and actually somebody who was in the studio was just kind of playing around, and they did something which I really liked, and I basically took the concept and ran with it. So I didn't totally invent the concept myself, but I saw something that I thought had potential, and from one piece that somebody had produced, we now have over 130 or 40 styles that represent all sorts of different subject matter that reflect U.S. culture.
And so people would have to like go to the website and view the whole view the catalog, right?
They could go to the website and view the catalog, or there are also retail stores throughout the United States that carry the product.
Oh, okay. I was wondering about that too.
Mm-hmm. I believe that there are retail stores in just about every one of the 50 states.
Oh.
Although it's not widely distributed, there
right.
are many stores.
How would one know? What is it on? Is there something on your site where it says, store location?
If they went to a website which says HKS4U, it's the number 4, but it's the letter H like Harry, K like Kathy, S like Sam.
Right.
The number 4U.com, that is the website of the production company. And on that website, which doesn't sell retail, they would be able to refer anybody who is interested in the product to a local retailer.
Oh, cool.
And then if they can't find a local retailer, generally speaking, there's another website called winecaddies.com, and that website will ship any place in the world, for that matter.
Right, and that's the one that I have, winecaddies.com.
Right, exactly.
Now, just offhand, I mean, like, is there a difference if, let's say, somebody goes on to winecaddies.com in terms of price? I mean, because people, looking price-wise.
Well,
is there a or go to, let's say, I'm just going to say, like, Macy's?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a very good question. First of all, the product is not sold in any major department store. Basically, they're sold in independently owned businesses. And we find that they get better attention because the people who own the stores have a vested interest in knowing about the product as compared to a larger department store where basically the product has to sell itself without someone knowing too much about the product.
Right.
And in terms of pricing, well, that's up to those individual store owners. We find that in very upscale areas, the product might be priced 10, 15, or 25% higher than you might find it in a more average socioeconomic area.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically, the product will sell for whatever the retailer decides. But
right.
seeing it on the website will typically charge like the lower end of the price points.
Okay. So would it be like, do you like purposely get them into wineries?
Actually, the product is sold in at least 100 wineries throughout the United States, and the wineries that feature the product typically have tasting rooms. And
right.
it's a very nice accessory for a tasting room, and since people are going through the winery and they're very focused on wine-related products, this is a perfect product for someone who might be a professional, for instance, a doctor, a lawyer, a dentist, or an executive, or someone, on the other hand, who might play a sport that we provide.
Right.
And so a lot of people won't just buy one. They might buy 5 or 10 at a time. Because it doesn't have such wide distribution, And because people haven't seen the product many times, they decide to, you know, to purchase several at a time for various friends and family. And the winery, will, in most cases, will ship it wherever the consumer would like, so people don't have to carry it home by themselves, because they each weigh about 2 or 3 pounds, and they all are about 12 inches high. So that's not a very easy thing to do if you're on some sort of a vacation.
So especially, So in other words, as they're shipping the wine to you, because you don't want to take that, they can just add that into the shipping. By the way, when I finish with the show, I'm going to call you to talk about some of the wineries, because as a journalist, I'm going on a lot of press trips, and they're asking to do wine tasting here, and I keep going to different wine tastings. And now that I've seen the product, and I think there are places that would probably really love it.
Right. Thank you. I mean, what's very interesting is Merle?
Yes.
Okay, I thought I lost you for a second. What's very interesting is that wine is produced in virtually every state in the United States.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Absolutely. And so, the potential for people enjoying wine and to being able to display the wine in a wine caddy such as ours is really unlimited. And I find it very interesting. I was talking to some people in Michigan about a year ago, and I said, excuse me, I just am unfamiliar with wine being manufactured in Michigan. And they said, well, they were a family farm that had been growing cherries for 4 generations, and they had a grandson in the family that had gone to an agricultural school. And he said, if you can grow cherries, you can grow grapes. And if you can grow grapes, you can make wine. And with that as a background, they started producing wine, and they make outstanding wines that have won all sorts of blind tasting tests. So you really can find wine almost any place, and it doesn't have to be expensive to be enjoyed.
Oh, yeah. It is amazing as I travel. I was just the most recent place I was at Brotherhood Winery, which is like the
in
oldest
New York
one.
State.
Yeah, which is the oldest one in the whole country.
Because they were allowed to produce during Prohibition, because it was made for the clergy.
Right. But
so I've been there years ago also. So I'm familiar with Brotherhood.
Do you have wine caddies there?
No, but I'm familiar with the winery itself because
I
went and, did a tour of the wine and then went to the tasting room later on.
Okay. That's what I'll talk to you about that one afterwards.
Okay.
But anyway, so, the artistry is so wonderful. One of the questions I always have a problem. You open up a bottle of wine, and then you have to find something to keep it. You don't want if you don't want to drink the entire bottle of wine. You know what I mean?
Right. Yes.
The tops of the wine caddies, like if you have the head or something like that.
Right.
Will the head act as a stopper?
Actually, we don't do that. There are many, many companies that do, but we found that it's just not something that lent itself to what we want to do. And since there were so many other companies doing it, we basically confined ourselves to the art part of it.
No, what I'm asking, if let's say now I have the one, the piano player.
Yes.
And if like I'm drinking the wine, if I just put the head back on it, will that
be fine?
Okay.
But it won't keep it from oxidizing, but it just for display.
Okay. But
there isn't a cork attached to the head.
Okay. Right. So it's not. So in other words, you have to have something. A cork has to be put in.
Exactly.
So
you can always just replace the cork that you took out when you opened the bottle.
Right. That's true. Oh, okay. I was just curious about that because
a lot of people have asked us that question.
Oh, good. This way, that question is now answered.
That's right.
For anybody who's listening, who listens to this show.
Exactly.
In terms of the pieces you have, which do you find the most? I don't say fascinating, I mean, mm-hmm. because, like, since you're not, I mean, you're basically at this point, I assume, are you looking in, like, some catalog that from Germany, or are you, like, you already have, you know, in your head, have come up with your own, like, sort of designs each time?
No, they're totally my designs. And
oh,
I
cool.
work with, I thank you, and I work with several artists in the United States, and they are degreed artists, and they have a lot of background, years of experience, and it's kind of a team effort. I basically come up with the ideas, and then we kind of tweak it, and sometimes we make 10 to 30 prototypes before we're finally, you know, comfortable with what it is we want to do. And then I first go to Germany to our production company to make sure that they can do it. And sometimes, even though we may have some great diagrams and some great images, sometimes what we want to do isn't what the production company is able to do. But as a result of our innovation, we've pushed the production process and made quantum leaps over the last 4 or 5 years. And if you had seen some of the product as far as 5 or 6 years ago versus the product today, you would realize that it was very rustic years ago. And now it's becoming, you know, much more mainstream and something that even if you don't like art, you can still like this product. And if you like art, you like it even more. Before, because it was such an artsy product, it was really like targeted to a more upscale and knowledgeable elitist kind of clientele. And now what we're trying to do is we're trying to make sure that it appeals to a broader range of customer.
Now, when you first got this started, were they making it using recycled?
Yes. Yes, they've been doing that from the very beginning. It started out like anything else.
Okay.
Somebody was doing something in the garage.
Oh, okay.
You know, and then it moved from one level to the next level to the next level. And, you know, now, as I said, we've got 140 different styles. So, you know, the production company is fairly large and sophisticated.
And where would you, like, actually get the recycled material from? Like, where would you go?
Well, I don't really get into that part of it, but
oh, okay.
I know that the production company just purchases it from metal suppliers, and
okay.
You know, they get it delivered. It's not like in the very beginning where they went through stockpiles of scrap metal themselves. It's not like they take various parts like you may have seen where somebody will take an old instrument or another piece of metal and then start welding with it. They basically have flat metal that they start with and they cut it out and then they
uh-huh.
make whatever it is we've designed.
Okay, because I'm curious as to, in other words, what would actually be recycled. Kind of a
oh,
thing
there,
to get
there's
it.
Tons of metal that gets crushed, including something as basic as automobiles. It just
okay.
gets crushed and it gets melted and then it gets, you know, put into a new shape through
right.
various production processes.
Okay. So in other words, your wine caddy could be somebody's old automobile.
Right.
Oh, you know.
It's something that has a new life from, you know, from what it was originally.
Well, it's better to do that than, you know, otherwise it won't, it's not going to melt. I mean, you know, it's only going to go in piles of garbage and...
Right, exactly. It would just be thrown out. This way you're recycling something and you're making it something that instead of looking like junk, it becomes art.
So, yeah.
And people hold on to things like this for 25, 30 years.
Oh, sure. Sure.
As a matter of fact, we've done pieces that aren't just like wine caddies where they're 12 inches tall, but we've done things on commission for people where we can do 6 and 10 foot sculptures that some corporations, for instance, have in their garden area.
Really? And
yeah.
and can these be seen around? I mean, like if
Well, they're at a corporation, so, you know.
Oh, they're a corporation. Oh, it's a Nazi, you know. Oh, so
right.
It's a,
but we've done things for private individuals who have liked what they've seen, and we've done custom work for them where we'll do 6 and 8 foot pieces that they can have displayed in their home or among their other art collection.
Mm.
So it's real sculpture, and it's all done by hand.
Yeah, I guess.
And no two pieces are exactly the same because it's not a manufacturing process where they're using machines, so everything is the same. You know, every single piece will be a little bit different. And what you see on the internet or what you see in a catalog, and it's all going to vary because sometimes a person who's doing the welding and is the artist does it one way, and sometimes he does it another. And it's just about how they feel that morning and, you know, what they decide to do and what kind of challenges they want to take and how they want to make it different or better or, you know, however it appeals to them that moment.
Now, let me ask you, to let the audience know that I had seen you, and I seen you at the GLBT Expo,
mm-hmm.
and you had pieces there that lent itself to same-sex couples.
Yes. Right.
And get these things done knowing you're going to be at the expo, or are these things like you started having on hand at one point?
Well, we've never had them in stock, but we have made them before.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been made upon request, especially in the last 2 or 3 years, where same-sex unions have been very popular. And we decided, since we were going to the show, that we would have them available, and we got a very nice response to it.
So, in other words, for instance, like if, because I saw you had like brides, grooms, things.
Yes.
So, in other words, it could easily, somebody can get two brides or two grooms if they want.
Exactly, right.
And
we now have them in stock, so people
could
order it and they could get shipment in 24 hours.
Now, because I don't remember, is the bride and groom, are they like with each other? Are they attached or something? I mean,
they're holding hands, so they're not physically attached, but their arms are interlocked.
Oh, okay, because I was trying to think of like how, so in other words, it sets itself up so that you could put a wine bottle in each one.
Exactly.
But you can't necessarily separate the two.
No, you can separate them.
You can.
Unlock their arms.
Oh, if you unlock their arms, so in other words, if they're having a fight, you can always...
Right.
They're having an argument or, you know, stuff like that or... You know,
right.
Rosie O'Donnell breaks off with her girlfriend. You know, one can take the other.
Right. They'll have time out and they'll go their separate ways for a while.
Or they'll use that when they, you know, part of the divorce settlement. Well, yeah, we can. You get one wine caddy, I get the other.
Well, the nice thing is you can separate it, right?
Yeah. But that's pretty cool that you can do that. It's funny because like the teddy bear company, I can't think of the name of the one in
Vermont teddy bear. Mm-hmm.
They were doing this. They were doing teddy bears, especially after Vermont with the civil union. They were dealing with teddy bears, and you'd have things like that. You know, groom, and you know things like that, and pride bears, and so on and so forth. So it's. You know, it's great to kind of keep up with the times.
Right, and it's great that it's becoming more mainstream and that you can find products like these around now.
Sure.
As a matter of fact, at the show, we also had wine flutes with bride, and groom on them, and we also had ice buckets with bride, and groom on them.
Really?
And we had them, they were not powder-coated, but they were engraved. So it looked really nice.
I have to, you know, it's funny. I have to keep this in mind when people, because people always ask me about, you're getting gifts for people and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, most of the time I don't know what to think because I say, I don't know. Because there are a lot of times, and I call, so there are certain things that just, you know, it's like another tchotchke, as I call it, you know.
Right,
and,
but for a wedding, you know, that's what people get. I mean, it's a gift.
But this is a usable gift. I mean, you're putting a bottle of wine in it. It's not
Yeah,
you know, so it's a piece of art. Plus, it's you know there's some
use of it.
So it's so that's why I think they're so nice.
And
there's enough people that drink wines. That's for sure.
That's for sure. And it's interesting that for weddings, it's not unusual to give members of the wedding party a specific gift. And what's so nice about
this
is there's such a broad range in the collection that if one person is a doctor and another person is a lawyer and another person is a golfer, you show a lot of thought by giving a very personal gift, by giving each gift specifically for one of the members of the party. So not everybody gets the same thing. They all get a very personal, specific gift, which shows a lot of thought.
Well, and to give an idea, like I saw the football player that you have, the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And you can put a different number.
Yes.
On the quarterback.
Right. You can personalize that. And in many cases, we can imprint a plate. So if somebody wanted to put down, you know, a name of a football team or the name of a business or the person's name who is receiving the gift, that could all be done and attached to the bottle caddy. So that makes it interesting and personal also.
Oh, okay. I forgot then to tell you that.
Right.
Is it too late?
No, it's never too late.
Oh, okay, because I know it hasn't been sent to me yet, right?
Not yet.
Okay, all right. I'll talk to you about that also.
Okay.
And she's not listening, so it doesn't matter.
Okay.
But so actually the best thing to do is to go on the website of Wine Caddies, and it's spelled CADDYS opposed to RES, winecaddies.com.
Exactly.
And you can get the all of the information and, look on the catalog and just go to town on it. I mean, as I said, it's just I'm fascinated, you know, because there's such nice pieces of artwork, you know.
Thank
and,
you, very much.
You know, and nothing,
I think they're very creative. It's something
nothing,
that just
yeah.
doesn't look like everything else that you've seen around,
yeah.
especially since they're handmade. They just, you know, they look very unique and they're very whimsical. So,
yeah.
you know, it's artwork with a sense of humor, which is unique in and of itself.
Yeah, and to think, if you get it as a gift, you won't whine about it.
Right.
Well, we could use that as a slogan. Okay.
Right.
Richard, I'm so glad you called in, and I'm going to call you back after the show because I have some ideas to tell you.
Okay.
The brain just never stops here when it comes to PR. I get it.
All right. I don't know which phone number you have, but we
can
talk
about
that.
When it comes up here, I'll just give you the first three. Should I give you the first three things?
Fine. Okay.
The 328.
Yes.
Okay.
Very good.
I'll call you
okay,
on
well,
that.
It's been a pleasure talking to you, and thank you for making me feel comfortable while you were interviewing me,
because
this is the first time I've ever been on any kind of public speaking, and I was a little concerned, but you made it very easy for me. Thank you.
It's and feel free to then I pull it off and put it onto your website.
Great. That's a great idea.
I think I must have asked every possible question I could.
I think you'd ask quite a lot, and that was very good, because the more your audience can learn, the more that they might become interested in actually purchasing one of our pieces.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, Rich, I'll talk to you in about an hour then, all right?
Okay, that's just great.
Thank you
very much, Mar.
Bye-bye. Okay. Oh, yes. On my show, if you look at the, on the website, of the show, you can see a picture of the wine caddy that I got. And, of course, Esther, my rubber chicken, had to get into the photo because there's a piano player and she wanted to sing along with the piano. I couldn't help that she wanted to. Yes, I do. I understand. Yeah, she's got to get her 2 cents in. Well, I'm going to go next to Pamela Reaney. Pamela, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi, Merle.
Well, before we go into this whole thing, Red Moon, is that your song?
Yes.
Okay. We're going to hear Pamela sing.
I liked hearing that. That was nice.
But before we get into the singing, I want to get into the Cromwell Manor.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I met you.
Yes, I've been working at Cromwell Manor Inn in Cornwall, New York, for a little over a year now. I started working there, helping out the owner, Jack, making breakfast and serving to guests in the morning. And we make a full gourmet breakfast, usually starting off with a breakfast delight, more like a dessert before we actually serve the entree.
And you mentioned why you did that, because?
A lot of times when you go out to eat, you never have room for dessert. So we like to start with dessert first.
Okay.
That way you always have room for it.
Right. So and now I had the that parfait. What was it?
Yes, you had the breakfast parfait that was made with an Elmwood Devonshire cream and some raspberry sauce in between layers of fresh fruit and the cream also in the layers.
And then
you liked that, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And Esther liked it, too, apparently.
Yes. I saw a recent picture of her.
Yeah.
getting into that parfait.
Yeah. And then I had that wonderful, the French toast. Now, what was it? It was a...
That was called banana bourbon French toast. It's actually one of our signature breakfast entrees. And the French toast is made with a multigrain Italian baguette, which makes it different right there. And then I make this bourbon maple syrup. It's made with maple syrup, brown sugar, and some vanilla, and butter, of course. And in the end, after I bring it all to a boil, I add, however I feel like adding the bourbon, depending on my mood, I guess, and let the alcohol burn off in the boil.
That was good, too. Oh, yes. With the slices of banana on the top.
Mm-hmm. And pecans.
Pecans, yeah.
Yes.
So now let's, because we can go back later about your baking business, but let's talk about the manor in itself.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us, all about it.
Well, Cromwell Manor Inn, Cromwell Manor was actually built in 1820 for David Cromwell, who was a descendant of Oliver Cromwell. And David had a son, James, who is maybe a little more well-known than David, but James was in the Battle of Gettysburg, and he died on the second day of battle, I believe it was, and his body was brought back to the manor, and he was buried in a family plot, and the plot is out behind the manor house. And the manor house sits on 7 acres of property. And as you go through the house, you see a couple of the guest rooms that we have. And you go into the breakfast room, and then you can look out back and see the beautiful patio where we have the patio furniture set up for our guests to enjoy beautiful days out there. And behind the stone wall is a nice open field with a couple of benches in the back corner. And it's the perfect place to go during the sunset because you can see the sun setting behind the mountains there. And it's really a very pretty setting. And we do host a lot of we've hosted a few weddings, smaller weddings there. It's really nice to have it on since you can't predict the weather, if the weather is really nice, then you have a great weekend.
Right.
And the party is really wonderful for the guests there. But we do try to have the wedding parties spend the night there because it's really nice to have your loved ones, close friends, and family staying under one roof. And when you have that beautiful setting, it really feels like it's your own home. And we really try to make people feel comfortable there and, like to pamper them.
So there's the rooms. How would you describe the rooms as being? I guess they're all different, but...
Yes, they all have different flavors. The inn does have 13 rooms. 9 of the rooms are in the manor house, and 2 of them have king beds, and several of them have wood-burning fireplaces. And the cottage, which was actually built in 1764, is down by the road, and... that one with the 4 rooms has more of an old world charm to it because it was so much older. And the rooms really reflect that type of a character. And it's really nice for a smaller group of people to rent out the whole cottage house because then they can feel like it's their own home away from home.
Right. Now the other building, is that's not the cottage house then, that's the residence?
There's a building right behind the manor house. That is the innkeeper's cottage.
Right, okay. And,
yeah, that's where Jack lives when there are guests staying in the manor house and at the cottage.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But Cromwell Manor Inn has been highly recommended by USA Today, and it was...
And recommended by me, too.
Thank you, Merle. it was called A Fantastic Bed and Breakfast on the CBS Early Show. And it's located about 15 minutes from West Point. We do get a lot of West Point cadets' parents and families staying there to visit their cadets. And we are 1 hour north of the George Washington Bridge, so it's quite convenient for city people to
sure.
come up for a nice weekend to get out into the country and get some nice fresh air.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're also... about 15 minutes from the shopping outlets, Woodbury Commons.
Oh, okay. I was having them drive me around all over. I wasn't sure where anything was there after a while.
Mm-hmm.
Of how, you know, distance-wise and,
sure.
you know, then went back to this and whatever. But,
yeah.
okay.
Yes, and the Storm King Art Center is just a couple of miles away.
Mm. Oh,
well,
okay.
It just opened for the season.
Oh, yeah.
Today.
Come to think of it, that's right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of hiking in the area. In fact, right across the road is a 4,000-acre nature preserve, the Hudson Highlands Nature Museum. So you really don't have to go far once you come to the inn to spend the night.
Oh, cool.
And wonderful dining, too. The Canterbury Brook Inn, three-quarters of a mile down the road, has wonderful continental cuisine.
Oh yeah, that was pretty cool. I got a picture with the me and the chef and Esther.
Yes, that's right.
She's got to get into everything. Did you see the picture I have of her taking a nap on the bed?
Yes, in your room you had the Wellington.
Mm.
I did.
She looked like she was actually. She looked like she was like snoring. You know what I mean?
She looked very comfortable. A little too comfortable.
Yeah, that's what I think.
But we do like to make everyone feel very comfortable. We love to pamper people and you know, give them the treatment, the extra treatment that they really deserve. And you know, it's just really, we like to make it special for people. In fact, this morning we served 4 people breakfast. Today, in the midweek, we are not as busy at this point, you know, this time of year. And we found out that 2 of them had birthdays.
Oh.
So I actually, Jack notified me last night, do you have any extra cupcakes? So I happened to have a couple of extra cupcakes, so I decorated them up nicely and brought them over to the inn this morning, and we sang happy birthday to them and gave them their cupcakes with a candle in it. So,
oh, cool.
You know, we just try to make the experience extra special for our guests.
Well, and speaking of cakes, you have a company called Lady Cakes.
Yes, actually it is called Sweet Lady Cakes.
Oh,
and
yeah. Wait a minute. I see the word Lady Cakes and all right. Okay.
Yes.
I'm looking at the card.
Oh.
It
okay.
might be the word sweet and it's small and
you probably can't read it.
That's okay.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I started my baking business about 8 years ago when my I got back into it because I had done a lot of baking and decorating cakes with my mom when I was a kid. And then I had started having children of my own, and my son turned 1 about 8 years ago, and I thought that I needed to make a special cake for him, just like how my mom used to make special cakes for me. So I made a 3-dimensional rubber ducky cake, all out of cake. And it was such a hit, and friends that saw it and my family members said, you need to start a baking business. So I started getting recruited by friends and by family members to make cakes for their special occasions. And then it just grew by word of mouth. People started calling me that were friends of a friend to order a cake. And so that's how my business really came to fruition. And it's been a lot of fun. I'm enjoying it. I get to create these wonderful cakes for people, and I don't have to eat them myself. So that's good. I'm not putting on those extra calories. But all of my cakes are made from scratch, and I put a lot of love into them. When people call to order a cake, I ask for any specific details about the person who the cake is going to be made for. If they don't have a specific theme, then I'll ask for maybe favorite colors or something, just so that I can personalize it a little bit for them. And then I can just take it away on my own and think of, you know, some kind of a nice design with those colors.
Now, do you ship these cakes, or these are like people that just, they come to you and they're local people?
Yeah, mostly local people. I have shipped some cupcakes to Michigan, and they did make them there safely, but I'm not making it a habit of shipping my cakes right now because I want them to be fresh. And we do deliver in Orange County, New York, for a small fee, and outside of Orange County as well. Rockland, Westchester, I have delivered to New York City as well. So we do.
Oh, you have, huh?
Yes. Yes.
Hint.
Yes.
I'll talk to you after the show. Actually, it's funny what's happening now. I mean, if they didn't say this on the TV, I probably wouldn't have thought as much about it. I don't know if you heard about the thing regarding chocolate. Have you heard the latest?
No.
Well, they're now telling you that for the sake of your heart, that you should have a piece of dark chocolate every day. But they're talking about like a square. It's like, yeah, right.
Who can eat just one little square?
I mean, but it's it, and now what's happened is, of course, now I'm craving chocolate, you know, but...
And I'm
thinking about, well, but in terms of the chocolate scene, now me, I will take the chocolate versus the cake because I want the chocolate. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But you're baking the cakes too, I guess. Then.
Yes, baking the cakes and decorating them. Yes, and I've started making some cupcake samplers. That might be something you would like. It's a little box with four different cupcakes, each a different flavor. And I usually have them as a theme. I offer them at certain times during the year. I did some for Christmas, some for Hanukkah. I just did some for Valentine's Day. And I put different designs on them, whether it be maybe a red rose, some little conversation hearts that I made myself out of fondant with little message on them. And just, you know, some other little things. Some I've made snowflakes on for the Christmas one. I made snowflakes on them. Poinsettias made out of buttercream icing. They're really nice works of art, edible works of art is what I like to call them.
Oh, good. That way
you don't have to eat the whole cake. You're not eating a whole cake. You're getting a taste of a different flavor.
Right. Okay. Yeah, we'll chat about this. What I'll do is... do it so that, let's say on my next show, I'll be eating cupcake and talking about your cupcake.
Yeah, oh.
Whoever I'm chatting with.
That's a great idea, Merle. I like that.
Yeah.
Right now, people that don't order things from me can go to Blooming Hill Farm. If you're in the area in Orange County, Blooming Hill Farm is in Blooming Grove, New York, on Route 208. And I do have a standing order with them. I deliver cupcakes every Saturday. They're an organic market, and they sell all kinds of produce, and they have a little bakery, and I make the cupcakes for them.
So are you using organic products to make the cupcakes?
I do use some organic products, yes.
Oh, okay.
Not everything is organic, though. I do use all natural products.
Oh, okay.
No preservatives.
Oh, that's good.
I think, yes.
Now let's get into the other portion of your life.
why that song came up. Because you sing now, too.
Yes.
Tell us about that career.
Yeah, that career, let's see. I started playing music. Well, music has been a part of my life forever, you know, ever since I was a child. But once I moved up here to Orange County, I started playing with a group. About 9 years ago, we just started playing casually, practicing for a friend's winter solstice party. And from there, the five of us formed this band, and we would practice once a week and go out and play at a couple of open mic nights. And after a couple of years, the band started winding down a little bit, and we started dwindling down to four members, then to three members, and now it's been about 5 years that we have just been a duo, a musical duo. We play most songs. I would consider us folk style, indie, singer-songwriter. Some of our influences would be Van Morrison, Alison Krauss, John Hyatt, maybe Lucinda Williams. They're some of our favorites, and we have covered some of their songs. And now we have written five songs, and we went into the recording studio in January, and we laid the tracks down. And now we have the CDs for sale. And we're trying to...
this is the one, Over the Line?
It is. Our group is called Over the Line.
Yeah.
And the name of the CD is World of Pain.
Okay.
And...
but it's not painful to listen to.
It's not painful to listen
okay.
to.
Okay.
You know, the
I listened
both
to
these...
it. I listened to it, and it wasn't painful.
Thank you. Both of these phrases actually come from a movie of which... My musical cohort, Arthur, is a big fan of, The Big Lebowski. And both of these lines are said in the movie several times. And we wanted to have a song on the CD, like a signature song, the title song. And so keeping with The Big Lebowski theme, we went for World of Pain. So we generated the song and wrote the song about, you know, with the name World of Pain. And the song that you played, Red Moon, was a song that we wrote about the lunar eclipse. That was actually our influence. You know, when a lunar eclipse takes place, the moon, the earth, and the sun are all aligned, and it casts a shadow on the earth, making the earth actually appear red for a period of time. And, you know, a couple of lines in The Red Moon, give me just a few more hours, you make my heart sing, the red moon being that time of rest, which I, you know, was thinking about the earth getting a break from light for a few hours. And, you know, it's hard for a lot of people these days to be able to take a break from your busy life. And so the red moon is a symbol of that break time that everybody needs. And, you know, for me, it's that break time I love to use for my music. And that's how that song came about.
And
is that one of your, is that your favorite one on the CD?
Picked that one up. I wanted to use that as a more, it was, the beat was a little more up and,
okay. Mm-hmm.
You know, I like an upbeat song when I'm playing on the radio. So that I can do my best on that. Sometimes people have to listen to some other songs. If I like it, it's too bad, you know. But
I don't know. I like the Dancing Queen.
But that's, by the way, the reason I even have Dancing Queen, actually what happened was that I was at a karaoke place, and I set this up for any of the New York Sharks players to
mm-hmm.
join me at a karaoke place. And this place was, it was all set up, you're on a big stage, it's a really, really big to-do kind of a thing. and 19 players showed up. They were all in their jerseys, and they were, you know, getting up and doing all kinds of stuff. And I decided, for whatever reason, to sing Dancing Queen. So I got up and I did Dancing Queen, and I had a couple of the Sharks joining me on the stage and dancing and doing some harmonies and you know, stuff like. And it happened that for some reason or other, they called it a second time, and we went up and do it some other people. So it became a running joke of me about singing Dancing Queen. So because of that, when I started my radio, I said, here should be my opening song. They always dedicate it to the New York Sharks, although I don't say it. It's like the in joke already.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But
that's very cute.
Yeah.
Well, I'm lining up some gigs for us this year.
Oh,
we
cool.
We have a couple of things going on.
Where?
In June, we're going to be playing at a coffee house in Goshen, the Noble Coffee Roasters. We'll play a 2.5-hour set there. It's a neat little place. They have some good coffees and some pastries, a very nice setting. And then on the 22nd of June, we're going to be going up to Rosendale, New York, which is in Ulster County, at the Rosendale Cafe. And we're gonna play at a singer-songwriter evening. So we'll share the stage with a few different singer-songwriters.
Yeah, do you ever sing at the inn? Because I know there's you have a piano in the living room, as
yes.
we call it.
Yes,
the living room is, and there's a guitar there too. So do you sing?
Funny that you ask that, because yes, I wasn't able to when you came to stay at the inn because Jack wasn't there. But Jack plays guitar a little bit, and. He's now deemed the B&B not just a B&B, but a B&BS.
B&BS?
B&BS, you know, not the BS, although he does love to BS a lot. but the BS stands for Breakfast with a Song. Okay.
In other words, I would have gotten, if he was there, the two of you would have been singing.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, yes, I'm going to have to come back.
You are going to have to come back.
After we serve
breakfast food, while people are eating, we'll sing a song for them. And in fact, we actually are just starting a special. It's going to go out on Facebook tomorrow for May 1st, the weekend of May 1st, a May Day Savings Celebration. And if you stay, you have to stay for a minimum of 2 nights. Between April 30th and May 2nd, so that you'll be there the evening of May 1st. And we're going to have a wine tasting and a concert by Over the Line at 5 o'clock.
Were you able to hear the guest that I had before?
I heard the last few minutes.
This might interest you. This guy
does... Wine Caddies.
Right, Wine Caddies. Take a look when you get a chance. Go to Wine Caddies, but it's spelled CADDYS.
Okay.
WineCaddies.com, and check it out. That may be something that would be of interest, and you'll see what I'm talking about.
I will check that out. I will.
I always... I love to network.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell.
I'll be talking to somebody on the next show and going, you know, there's these great cupcakes up in.
There you go.
My head thinks like, okay, let's see, then we should get your cupcakes over at the art place and over, you know, all the places that I visited.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I've made shark fins on cupcakes.
Ooh. Ooh.
There might be a possibility there.
I'm going to, when I finish the show, I'm going to call you. Oh, God, I have an idea. You see, when I just finished arranging this, somebody's going to come to the game on the 24th, and this woman, she's going to be doing the coin toss, and she also wants to get up in the press box and call some of the game. And I, you know, that's okay. And what's happened is is within her. She's the CEO of a company, and what they do within the company is that they go around like cleaning up places. So they do like voluntourism. So they like I had gone on a cruise, and like at every port they would do this. And so what happened was that originally I thought they were going to do a cleanup when coming to New York, and I didn't see anything. And I got a hold of her. I said, "What's happened with that?" She said, "I don't know where we can do it." I said, "Okay, leave it to me." And I just finished within a day setting it up that they're going to have the cleanup in the area where we're playing the game. And I said, "And anybody who comes to do the cleanup gets a free ticket to the game."
What a great idea!
So, you know, so I'll talk to you about how I can incorporate you with the Sharks too.
Mm-hmm.
I can. Oh, you know, it gets all that gets publicity.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
but anyway, so it actually I'll be looking forward to. I didn't have any of your cake, right? I just had, but what I had was, sinfully good. It was so good.
Thank you.
And you know, it's, as I go around my house saying, "What can I make that sweet?" What can you do? Oh, that's right. It's Passover. I can't have any bread. Oops, that bread that I had today. Oh well. I should have done a prayer over it, and it would have been okay. Yeah.
We just over the line also just got a gig booked at the Lyceum Center. The Lyceum Center is in Sugarloaf, New York.
Cool.
Sugarloaf, that little craft artist village.
Uh-huh.
And there's a state-of-the-art.
Now, Sugarloaf is in what county?
It's in Orange County.
Oh, it's Orange County, okay.
Yes, it is Orange County.
And when is that?
Our gig is July 29th. They host an outdoor summer concert series on the front lawn, which is really nice. I've been there for concerts before to attend them. And they have a really professional stage set up. They have a sound guy there to make sure everything sounds great outdoors. And they just invited us to come and play a set for them. And so I'm really looking forward to
great.
That.
Great. You know, let Susan know about this. Then they can, can they post it up on, like, tourism site, events?
Yeah. I know that Lyceum does do a fair amount of publicity.
Mm-hmm.
On this, but I should let her.
Yeah, sure. Because then I don't know. Like what I'm trying to do this year is to do a lot of what I call like local travel as well. I mean, I'm always, I'm going off to North Carolina and all these other places, and I want to hit the local travel. And the local travel I want to hit is like New York State,
mm-hmm.
and just concentrate on that. And as a matter of fact, next week I'm doing Westchester County.
Oh.
So I don't want to go too far up, because then it'll expand too much. Because what I'm trying to do is like do maybe at least like do three for this year,
mm-hmm.
to get it in different seasons.
Mm-hmm.
So I can for what's offered, and it probably won't be like, I guess late in the spring. To go back up to the areas, because I want to start with the farms, and things that are outdoors, that kind of thing. I'll be back. So
great.
And
fall is a wonderful time to visit the Hudson Valley.
Oh yeah,
With all the apple farms and the leaves changing. Really,
mm-hmm.
October is our busiest month at the Cromwell Manor.
Uh-huh.
So you. Got to make sure you get your plans, your travel plans.
Oh, sure. As a matter of fact, yeah, Esther said she wants to go back too.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
I want to see Esther again.
Unless her twin sister comes.
Oh,
Eunice. Our twin sister Eunice hasn't gone traveling with me yet. I'm not sure if I want to take her though. I can't. Not sure of her personality.
Oh.
But we'll see. And a little baby, too.
Oh, no. Yes, yes, right. The little baby.
Who's trying to find his way home.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't think
it
was
the... You can contact me about my cakes at www.sweetladycakes.com.
Oh, okay. So it's Sweet Lady Cakes?
Yes.
All one word, sweetladycakes.com.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that's the best way to contact you altogether, right?
Yes.
As opposed to trying the inn or anything else?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
You know, I'm usually at the inn 5 days a week. And if you sent an email to the inn, I'm sure that I would get it. I think
sure.
would give it to me. But we also have a Over the Line has a Facebook page set up too, and you can actually listen to our original songs on our Facebook page too and see some photos of us and also keep abreast of our events coming up. Do I have our gigs listed on there too?
Okay.
So
it's not enough that I have Esther in the room here. My cat just came in to see what's on my computer. He's just looking up. He's looking up the computer. It's funny because when things go by, you know, he looks on. He's like he's trying to catch it. You know, have like words going across the computer. You know,
mm-hmm.
when it gets when you know when it rests. You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Start
and then
squatting.
He tries to see if he can catch it. He's so cute. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's so cute. Anyway, well, it was great having you call in.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Yeah, and
my pleasure.
Call you in a little while.
Okay. That sounds great, Merle.
All right. Yeah.
Have a great night.
All right. Good. Talk to you soon.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay. Yes, that was pretty good. You know, it's funny because I'm on the phone as I'm doing this. I was about to hang up because it's almost like you just had a conversation with somebody. Then I suddenly realized, no, Merle, you're on the radio show. Yeah. But anyway, well, before I end the show, which I'll, because I want to end it early, I just wanted to comment that I saw two Broadway shows yesterday, yes, in one day. The first one I saw next fall, and I highly recommend the show. I'm trying to write about it. The thing that, not that it bothered me in the show, that I just had a bit of a problem with because I didn't really look into what the show was about or, you know, I didn't do that. I just went to the show. And so I didn't realize that there was a lot of, like, flashbacks happening. So, like, I, you know, was kind of getting lost and getting lost also on who the characters were. So when I write the article, I'm going to give a 101 on all of the characters. Nothing that'll be, you know, nothing you can give away. Like, you know, so somebody say, oh, I wish you didn't tell me that, stupid ass, you know. But basically what the show is about is, say, a gay couple, two guys, and they are significant others. They live together, and they've been together for for 4 years, and there is a car accident having to do with a taxi, and one of the guys, Luke, winds up in the hospital. And so while he's in the hospital and he's got this really bad head injury, it opens up and you're seeing these people come in. And, you know, so I had a hard time figuring out who was who. So what you had this woman, the character Holly, who apparently is friends with the couple, which is Luke and Brad. And they consider her like a fag hag. She hangs around gay guys. But she's looking for, you know, a boyfriend. But they work for her. She owns a candle place. And then there is another guy there who I just couldn't figure out who it was. Apparently he was, he had almost dated Luke prior to Luke meeting Brad, and they called him because he was on the emergency phone, case of emergency, because they hadn't taken that and he hadn't switched it to Brad. Okay. And then you have Luke's parents. And Luke's father is homophobic and his mother is, I don't know, she pops pills, but I don't get that she's necessarily homophobic. Okay. So that's it in terms of the characters. And what happens is the flashbacks go to starting from when Luke and Brad met, and they just keep, you know, going up until the point, I guess, when it now comes together, right before the taxi accident kind of thing. So that's the story with that. Now, it's a very dramatic, serious play that's a comedy. So in other words, the seriousness has things to do with, for instance, that Brad can't visit Luke because he's not, you know, member of the family. Then there's also a whole controversy regarding Luke being a heavy Christian and feeling that whatever he does, he's sinning all the time, so he keeps praying because he's sinning on his being gay. So, I don't know, he's praying for everything. I guess he prays before he eats, he prays after sex. But the whole controversy on this whole thing goes with something like if somebody kills and if they're Christian, they're pardoned or whatever. They can go to heaven by being Christian and pardoned. And if they're not the killer can go to heaven, but the one who's killed can't, kind of thing. This is one of the producers, is Elton John of this show. Highly, highly, highly recommended. The other one, I can't even say highly recommend because it's ending on Sunday. Didn't do that well. The show is All About Me, and it stars Michael Feinstein and Dame Edna. And it's kind of, they each think they're doing their own show, and they find, you know, I don't know, that they got on the same bill, and they're trying to deal with it, and it just doesn't work. And I guess the audience found that it doesn't work either. It was okay. I don't know what to say about that, but it kind of was like, it sort of felt like, well, I don't know, maybe Dame Edna couldn't do enough of a show, and Michael couldn't do enough of a show, and that's why they did this. I'm not sure. So I can't say go see it. I don't know, although I don't know if they're taking this on tour. If they're taking this on tour, it might work in a small theater, but for people paying like about $120, I wouldn't, whatever. So that's the story with that. So I don't know what I'm doing next week. Heavens knows. But I'll be talking. I'll get it up there to as far as the show. And so everybody, have a good day, evening, afternoon, or night, and wherever the kind of weather. And yeah, say take care.